Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. When a loved one needs a bed in one of Ohio's 6 psychiatric hospitals, chances are there isn't one available. 9 out of every 10 beds are already taken by Ohioans in the criminal justice system. From people awaiting trial to those found not guilty by reason of insanity, Ohio's psychiatric hospitals cannot keep up with the demand. Leanne Cornyn is the director of the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, and she recently chaired a work group tasked with finding solutions to this particular problem. Leanne, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you for having me.
So Ohio has 6 regional psychiatric hospitals that hold about 1,100 patients. My first question is simply, is that enough beds for a state with 11 million people?
Well, Ohio at one point in time had more psychiatric hospitals than we currently have, but thanks to a robust buildup of community-based behavioral health services, our focus has really been on treating individuals in the community and reserving those beds for our sickest patients. However, we know that there probably is additional capacity needed in our state. That's why we recently cut the ribbon earlier this summer on Central Ohio Behavioral Health, which is our brand new psychiatric hospital in the Hilltop here in Columbus. And that facility added 30 additional state-of-the-art beds to our state hospital system. And earlier this year in the capital budget, $10 million was included to help Ohio start the process of building a new state psychiatric hospital in the Dayton region, which will bring more than 200 additional beds online here in Ohio. But certainly that takes time to build.
Yeah. Practically speaking, what happens if you are referred to one of these hospitals, but there isn't a bed available?
For many Ohioans, that means staying put in the jail where they are currently located if they are involved in the criminal justice system. We work really hard in partnership with jail administrators, with county sheriffs, to ensure that individuals who are the sickest in our state jails have access to beds as they become available. But we currently do have a wait list. For the average Ohioan, for our civil patients, individuals in the community who may need an inpatient stay but otherwise can't access one, we have partnered with our 50 boards of alcohol, drug, and mental health to create a program called the Hospital Access Program, which has actually supported more than 5,000 Ohioans to receive inpatient psychiatric care in our freestanding private psychiatric hospitals.
Yeah, I think that's important to keep in mind. Those 1,100 beds are public beds, but there are private hospitals if you have insurance that will cover it or if you have money to pay for it. One of the most fascinating stats that I looked at in this report, I just hope you can help me understand it, is that 20 years ago, hospitals, these public regional psychiatric hospitals, were serving about a 50-50 mix of what you call forensic and civil patients. Now it's 92% forensic, or those coming from the criminal justice system. Do we know how that happened?
This has been a national trend. Ohio is not alone. And what we're seeing is more criminal justice-involved patients coming to us for longer stays. So for every single one of those long-term commitments that we have, those can take a bed off of line for 7-8 years, which is an incredible number of civil patients that we could be serving during that same period of time. We know that our civil patients are coming to us for about 2 weeks. We have an average length of stay of roughly 14 to 16 days for those patients. So when you think of one person occupying a bed for numerous years versus a civil patient who could be occupying that bed for 2 weeks, the impact is pretty phenomenal. Even a decade ago, we were serving almost 7,000 civil patients a year in our state psychiatric hospitals. And in 2023, that number was about 1,500. So because those longer lengths of stay for our criminal justice involved patients are continuing to increase and that number of patients is increasing, that just means we have fewer beds available that we can sort of turn over a little bit quicker with those civil patients, which allows us to serve more people.
Given that it's a national issue, has the like what is the conversation around why we're seeing so many more patients struggling with mental illness in the criminal justice system?
I think that is a question that everyone, Ohio's not alone, is trying to grapple with. I think some of it can be attributed to post-pandemic trauma that we all collectively have experienced. You know, as we've seen with young people who are demonstrating increased prevalence of anxiety and depression in our schools, you know, we've seen the steady increase of some of the sickest patients coming through our crisis centers, our emergency departments, our jails, and needing these services here in the state of Ohio. But just as we're seeing those trends of young people with anxiety or depression or other mental illness sort of slowly decrease statewide and nationally, we're also starting to see a slow in the increase of the number of patients who need forensic evaluation and also services in our jail, in our state psychiatric hospitals. So we're still trying to uncover what the driver is for all of this. But there seems to be some kind of corollary between broader community prevalence of mental illness and what we're seeing in our state psychiatric hospitals and jails as well.
We talked a little bit about the beds that we're building, both here in Central Ohio and one planned for the Dayton area. But outside of adding more capacity, what can we do to better serve people in these situations? Because you guys spent many weeks and came up with a bunch of recommendations that weren't just build more beds.
Sure. So the work group came up with 15 recommendations across six different domains. Five of those recommendations really focused on our broader behavioral health system needs. And there was so much conversation in the work group around if we are intervening at the point where an individual with mental illness or substance use disorder is already involved in the criminal justice system, it's almost too late. We really need to focus on getting upstream through universal, indicated, and targeted prevention strategies as early as possible in our schools, in our communities, and after-school programs. That really is our best opportunity to prevent this steady increase in the number of patients coming to our state psychiatric hospitals. But ultimately, we need to be focused on serving the right patient with the right care in the right place and at the right time. And that's not always aligned in our criminal justice system, in our judicial system, in our state behavioral health system as well. So a lot of that means better community partnerships across systems. We need to work more collaboratively with criminal justice and with the judicial system. We need to work on speaking the same language and making sure that our staff is cross-trained. So we understand how other systems work and operate. We need to be delivering better behavioral health care in other community settings, including our jails. So there are a lot of opportunities for us, both in the community and in institutional settings, to really deliver better quality care at the right time to the right individual.
One of the other recommendations was increasing support for 988, which is the suicide helpline. How do you want to expand it? What is the goal there?
Well, right now, we have been operating 988 for about 2.5 years. We launched in July of 2022. And for listeners who may not be familiar, 988, as you said, is Ohio's statewide suicide and crisis lifeline. Anyone who is experiencing an emotional or substance use crisis, them or their family member can call 988 to access a trained professional to help de-escalate that situation and bring in additional services and supports if needed. Maybe that's a mobile response team coming to somebody's home or work or school or wherever they're at in the community to help that individual stabilize and then connect them to ongoing services. So there are a lot of opportunities for us to continue to create awareness of 988. Right now, only about a third of Ohioans know that 90-8 exists, which is double the national average. So that's great, but certainly we still have more work to do. But we also want to make sure that this is a fully integrated crisis system where we're able to deploy mobile crisis services into the community to where they're needed. And we're also working on standing up a statewide mobile response and stabilization service for youth 21 and under in every single Ohio community. Right now, we're in a little over 50 counties, and we want to take that to all 88 in 2025. And we see 988 as a critical opportunity to deploy those services because many times this is the first interaction that some families are having with the behavioral health system. And we want to, again, make sure that every Ohioan who reaches out is getting the right care at the right place at the right time.
One of the things I thought was really interesting, because you focused a lot on the capacity at these regional psychiatric hospitals, but you also talked about improving outpatient, what you call competency restoration programs. So, ways to help individuals without putting them in the hospital.
Yeah, so in 2021, Governor DeWine signed a piece of legislation that for the first time allowed us to serve misdemeanor offendants with offenders with outpatient competency restoration services. Previously, these individuals may have had to wait for a bed to open up in one of our state psychiatric hospitals. So over the past few years, we've seen a steady increase in the number of courts taking advantage of this service. And we've also seen an increase in the number of patients served and the success that we're having. And effectively, these are the same services that individuals would receive in an inpatient setting. But if the offender is nonviolent, if the offense is a misdemeanor, really, we should be able to stabilize that person in the community and not need that inpatient psychiatric bed. So we're about on par with our success rate in outpatient competency settings as we are in inpatient. So we're really proud of the success that we're seeing in that program. One of the challenges we did hear in the work group was many of these individuals who aren't successful, it's because their other social needs aren't being met. It may be housing, it may be transportation, it may be access to foods. So that's part of that collaboration with other community providers to ensure that we're meeting the holistic needs of these individuals so that they can stabilize and thrive back in the community.
One of the recommendations that we're definitely going to dive deeper into in the remainder of the hour deals with intervening earlier, looking at elementary, preschool age children, trying to identify problems before they become addictions, before they become criminal behavior.
Well, Governor DeWine has been a champion for prevention and prevention education since his very first day in office when he signed his first executive order creating the Recovery Ohio Initiative. And this was part of his first budget was to provide funding to bring prevention education into every single classroom in the state of Ohio. We've come a long way since then. Now, almost 100% of schools are reporting that they are providing and delivering prevention programming in schools. We know that there's still so much more that we need to do, but continuing to invest in programs like evidence-based home visiting, which helps parents become their child's first and best teacher, high-quality pre-K and child care, evidence-based prevention programming in schools, delivering behavioral health services in schools. Thanks to Student Wellness and Success, more than 500,000 students received mental health services right in their school because of those resources. And for kids who may have higher needs, we now have Ohio Rise, which is serving more than 30,000 Ohio children with really complex behavioral health needs and delivering higher levels of care and care coordination so that their families can better meet those child's behavioral health and developmental needs. So, really trying to do everything we can as a state to meet those clinical mental health needs early so that they don't progress into, like you said, those criminogenic behaviors as adults, where individuals may need those higher levels of care in one of our state psychiatric hospitals.
My final question for you is about money, because we're about to head into a budget year, and it's going to be the first year since all of the extra COVID, federal COVID relief dollars are really winding down. What are you hoping for? What do you think we need in terms of funding going forward? And do you have any concerns about how we're going to fill the gap from the federal COVID dollars?
Well, as you said, this is going to be a much more normal budget year compared to years past. And it's a long way between now and July when we'll see what makes its way all the way through the budget process. So we're really focused on what we as a department can do right now, because 7 months is too long for us to wait to take action. So we are really focused on all of the recommendations that we can start implementing today. And more than half of them are already underway through our agency. One of the ones I love to highlight is the forensic navigator recommendation. These are individuals with clinical experience who can go into our jails, our local jails, and help triage and assess patients who may need higher levels of care or who could candidly just be stabilized with the right medications in that setting. So we have already launched three positions across the state to bring in forensic navigators in Columbus, Cleveland, and Cincinnati through our three hospitals in those areas to better triage and assess patients in our jail. So it's one of the recommendations we're really excited to see the impact of, and that's where our focus is right now.
That's Leanne Cornyn, Director of the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Coming up, how do we reach younger Ohioans who are struggling with their mental health? That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Today, we're talking about mental health and how we can better care for those struggling. We began with a conversation about the lack of beds in our regional psychiatric hospitals. And one of the solutions that a working group studying the issue came up with was to start reaching out earlier, before people are in crisis, even before they're adults. Vicki Thompson-Sandy is president and CEO of the Buckeye Ranch, a nonprofit here in Central Ohio that specializes in mental and behavioral health treatment for children. Welcome to All Sides, Vicki.
Hello, Anna. Thank you for having me.
And we're joined by Dr. Molly McVoy, who specializes in child and adolescent psychiatry at University Hospitals in Cleveland. Welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
So Governor Mike DeWine likes to use this analogy for mental health of people falling into a river. He says we've been fishing them out of the river for years, but what we need to do is walk upstream and figure out why they're falling into the water in the first place. And that probably starts in childhood. So, Dr. McVoy, where do we need to start? Where are the kids falling in the river?
That's a great question. And the first thing that I think is important is recognizing that up the river means kids. And as a child and adolescent psychiatrist, I feel like this is what I spend 85% of my day saying, is that waiting until someone is even 18 or 19 is too late. Most serious mental illness starts with some sort of signs in adolescence, sometimes in childhood, but certainly in adolescence. So we need to be out there saying these kinds of things, getting people aware, working with pediatricians to identify kids early because they can get better.
Yeah, according to that working group's report, half of all lifetime mental illness starts by age 14.
That's 100% true. And even if you are not diagnosed at 14, there are things that are sort of warning signs that those of us that work in mental health can help support families. And, pediatricians are the front line and are getting better and better at helping support that.
1 in 5 children was living with a mental disorder before the pandemic. Dr. McVoy, I wonder, is that increasing? Are we seeing more?
More. So what we're seeing, and it started before the pandemic, that the increasing use of social media and increasing life online was leading to higher rates of particularly anxiety and depression in adolescents. And then that was exacerbated by all the things that we know happened during the pandemic and led to a worsening of what we already knew as a mental health crisis for kids.
Vicky, what are you seeing here in Central Ohio?
Sure, we're definitely seeing the demand for our services for youth mental health. Primarily, we're serving children 12 to 17 years of age. Much like Governor DeWine, we set out several years ago to say, let's get farther up the river and to prevent kids from falling in the first place. And so we're really focused on prevention and trying to do some early identification of those signs that Dr. Mavoy is talking about so that we can support parents in helping them feel like they have the skills that they need to prevent behavioral or emotional difficulties with their children.
Yeah, one of the things that gets bandied about a lot in mental health conversations is something called an ACE score. And you hear this when, especially when you're talking about children with behavioral issues. Actually, Molly, can you explain what ACE is and why this score matters so much?
Absolutely. So ACE stands for Adverse Childhood Events, and it is one of the many terms that relates to trauma, or adversity that individuals face. And it was a study, actually, now almost 40 years ago, which I find
Oh,
amazing,
wow.
looking at adults in a Kaiser group in California, in primary care. And what they found was one, that most people have some sort of adversity. So when you think of an ACE, it ranges from anything from the loss of a parent when you were young to some substance use in the home, all the way to what we think about more traditionally as abuse. So it's not specific to abuse, it's a little more broad to try to encapsulate adversity. And most people face adversity. But if most people don't face tremendous amounts of adversity, and so what the breakthrough with and the use of ACEs over time has been one to recognize how prevalent it is, and that people who have 6 or 7 ACEs have 10 to 20 times the rate of suicide and early death as individuals who do not have that many adverse childhood experiences.
Vicky, how important is that when you're looking at these children that come in look for help? Do they typically have higher scores?
They do. So the kids that we see both at the prevention end, when we're working with kids in school, tend to have some ACEs. If we think about kids who are more prone to mental health, there are kids who live in poverty, kids who have had some type of trauma in their family life, food insecurity, all of those things exacerbate the propensity of their likelihood of having mental health. At the Buckeye Ranch, we're known for our residential mental health treatment campus where we serve kids with higher levels of acuity. It's unbelievable, actually. 6 and 7 would be good for some of those kids. It's unbelievable the adversity that they have faced in their short lifetime. And so that's why it's important for mental health treatment providers to understand trauma and to approach the work from a trauma-informed lens, so that we understand that that trauma has really shaped their brains of these little young people, and they're responding to the world based on those lenses, living a life through multiple traumas. And so it's important that we understand that and approach them in the right treatment modality.
Yeah. For those wondering, it really runs the gamut. It's have your parents divorced? Do you have someone in prison? Is there someone struggling with addiction in your household? Has someone attempted suicide in your household? It's not just traditional like sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect. Right. There's a whole host of them. And if you have two or three, that sounds like it's kind of normal, but when you get 6, 7, 8, 9, that's when it becomes problematic. So like if you take your score and you have a 3, don't freak out.
That's yes, right. And I think what Governor DeWine, in addition to most of us that work in mental health, want to understand is that many people, even with multiple adverse childhood experiences or with many things that have happened, many people are resilient and do well. What we don't understand very well is what are those things? What helps somebody do well? Like, why do some kids come into my office and they've been through incredibly difficult things, yet they're doing quite well? Or kids I see in schools that I work with. And we need to understand better the risk factors that lead to mental health disorders and why. And what are the things we can support and beef up and help improve the resilience of individuals who've dealt with adversity?
Yeah, I think that's such a difficult question. I wouldn't even begin to know how to answer why two children, maybe even from the same household, have such wildly different outcomes.
Yeah, I think that is the question, right? As if you ask a parent who's parented more than one child, it's like, did this person really grow up in the same home? I have two daughters who tend to behave differently, right? Have different likes, different views on the world. So I think that is just the amazing thing about human behavior and our world. But we do know that there are some things, right? Like a supportive adult, right? Having stability in their life. Kids who transition from school after school after school have under compounding issues, like they just do not feel successful in their education, and that gets them behind. So there are indicators that we know if we can wrap those around children, they will have a higher chance of being resilient.
So I want to talk a little bit about perhaps some of the early warning signs. And I know it's very individual depending on the children, but we're going to get into some of the programs that the Buckeye Ranch is doing with schools and in partnerships a little later in the segment. But, you know, when you're looking at children in pre-K, in kindergarten, in elementary school, like, what are there any universal, like, oh, we need to take a closer look at this?
So this is such a psychiatrist answer. The 10,000 foot view is it's very dependent on the kid. But I think about what is the job of that child at that age in that situation. So a preschooler or kindergartner, their job is to get to preschool and kindergarten, make friends, and be creative. So if those things aren't happening consistently, right? So not one day or a few days, every child, every human has bad stretches, and our ability to interact with people varies even more than our ability to sort of have our bodies be well. So this is not 1, 2, 3 days, maybe even a week. If persistently a little kid is not getting to preschool, able to separate from their parents, able to spend the day making friends, causing trouble in a developmentally appropriate way, then we start to wonder. The other big sort of thermometer I think about is sleep. So most kids, when provided a safe, and this again, right, in the context of all the things we know not everybody has, but most kids sleep. Most kids fall asleep, stay asleep till the next day. So if they're not sleeping well, that's another on the radar for me. As kids get older, then we start to think about, in addition to being at school, making friends, cooperating in general with the adults in their life, we start to think about, are they able to complete the tasks in front of them? So are they able to read? Are they able to help at home with certain kinds of jobs that a family might ask them to do? And back again to sleep. Are they able to sleep and stay asleep? Those are the 10,000 foot view things that and a pediatrician will ask about all of these things at their visits that start to give us a sign if there's things we should worry about.
Vicky, anything to add?
You know, I just think about when I, again, talk to my own teenagers and think about like anxiety. Anxiety actually is a good thing, right? It's uncomfortable, but it helps us recognize like something's happening, there's tension here. You know, I think about when I have a major presentation to do, I get a little anxious about that, but then it forces me to really dig in and get prepared for that. So some of the behaviors that Dr. McFoy talked about, right, are when it's happening in small doses is not an issue. It's when that feeling of anxiety or that uncomfortableness dominates, you can't get past it, right? The child can't sleep, the child can't sit in their seat in the classroom, they can't follow the rules, they can't keep their hands to themselves. Those are the indicators, I think, when that uncomfortable emotion or behavior gets too much.
Yeah. And I think that's, it's so hard because I think as a parent, so I have a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old, both girls. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard to think, like, I know they're struggling from time to time, but it can feel so confusing, I think, as a parent to know when I need outside help and when to ask for it.
And I think, so one, you can always, right? So always ask. Like, I would suggest to err on the side of reaching out to someone who knows what, who isn't the parent, right? So I also have a 12-year-old, and it's amazing how much wiser I am with my patients than I am with my 12-year-old, right?
Exactly. Like,
so if there's questions, parents should reach out to someone they trust as a default. What I think I have been struck by over the last decade, worsened by the pandemic, is just what Vicky was talking about, that there's an increasing amount of anxiety and a decreasing tolerance for it. So a little bit of worry, a little bit of discomfort, getting through the day, struggling through the day is part of growing up. It's part of being a human being. My son is not going to be surprised when this is what comes out of my mouth, but social media has provided such an opportunity for more anxiety and immediate response, so that there's both higher levels of it and I need something right away. I need something right now to manage it. And that's really not helpful. And so I've been struck by the imbalance of how much we're feeling stressed out and how little tolerance we have for it over the last decade.
That was Dr. Molly McFoy, who specializes in child and adolescent psychiatry at University Hospitals. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Vicky Thompson-Sandy from the Buckeye Ranch will be hanging on during the break, where we'll be talking about new strategies and ways they're combating the mental health crisis in children. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about mental health this hour and how we can help our children before they end up in crisis. Still with us is Vicky Thompson-Sandy, president and CEO of the Buckeye Ranch. So we talked a lot in the last segment about the growing number of children experiencing mental health issues and how we need to essentially find them before they fall into the proverbial river. So I want to talk about some of the things that you're doing. So the Buckeye Ranch has partnered with Nationwide Children's Hospital to open a facility, a first-of-its-kind facility, a 48-bed residential treatment place in Grove City. It's going to open in the summer of 2025. What is going to happen there? How did this partnership come about?
Sure. So the Buckeye Ranch started over 60 years ago in Grove City with providing residential mental health treatment on that campus. It's one of the only programs we have where children have to leave their family and their community to come into treatment. And as we were partnering with Nationwide Children's Hospital over the years, we began to recognize this gap in our behavioral health continuum in Central Ohio. And so with the addition of the Big Lots Behavioral Health Pavilion, we had children accessing that service for psychiatric inpatient care, mostly kids who were struggling with suicide ideation, suicide attempts, kids who were really struggling behaviorally because that anxiety and depression was coming out externally. And they were treating them, getting them ready to discharge, and they couldn't get them discharged to home because families were really fearful that their child was going to take their own life and they weren't ready, or into placements within our child welfare system. So we partnered to create a solution to that level of care, knowing that we are have expertise in residential treatment, and knowing that Governor DeWine was investing in youth mental health. This level of care came about through Ohio RISE. And so we were the first in Ohio to start. We've had that program a year now. And when this new building is completed, we will be able to serve 20 children on any given day in psychiatric residential treatment. These are kids who a physician orders psychiatric treatment. It typically is a step down from inpatient care. We involve the family in their treatment so that we can get the kids back home or back into the community.
I hate to call it a halfway house, but it kind of sounds like that's what you're describing, that middle place between inpatient and just being back at home.
That's exactly right. For families, being able to, right, when kids step down from the hospital, they'll be treated, but they'll get to practice going home on the weekend where the family can then feel comfortable that they are ready to care for them. And the child can feel, you know, those skills of resiliency that we talked about.
You're also partnering with Southwestern City Schools on a program that starts in pre-K, and it evaluates kids based on that ACE score that we were talking about earlier. How many schools do you work with? What's the importance of getting in at like kindergarten, pre-K, and doing these universal screenings?
Sure. Well, I should say strategically at the Buckeye Ranch, well, we knew that this psychiatric residential treatment was a missing component in our service provision within Central Ohio. We also knew that we didn't want kids to leave their family and community to come for treatment, that we wanted to prevent that from happening where possible. So strategically, we started out to do school-based, community-based mental health treatment. And then this last year expanded into early childhood mental health programming. And so our partnership with Southwestern City Schools is one partnership where we both have master's level clinicians in their junior highs, middle schools, and high schools. But in three of the schools in Southwest City Schools, we also have early childhood mental health. That really is programming to identify kids early on who need support. An early identification of those indicators that Dr. McCoy spoke about. We can spot those, begin to help the educators on how to respond to that, begin to work with the family on how to support their child and prevent further behavioral or emotional problems with their children.
One of the other issues facing Ohio is simply a lack of mental health providers. We are running behind. Simply put, people are retiring. We are not growing and bringing in enough providers. And I want to bring in to this conversation Republican Senator Teresa Gavarone. She's introduced a bill that would create a new category of mental health worker. Welcome to All Sides, Senator Gavarone.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
So what is a certified mental health assistant and what would they do?
Thank you. I just want to comment on what you had just said about the shortage in mental health professionals. It's projected in by 2030, Ohio is going to have only 52% of the psychiatrists that we need. And right now, nearly half of Ohio counties are currently in a mental health professional shortage area. So we really have a crisis here in Ohio, and I know people are experiencing it across the state. And that's where we came up with the idea of a certified mental health assistant. So this is a new licensed mental health professional who would be able to really be an extender. A doctor would need to make the initial diagnosis, get someone stabilized, and then they can do their follow-up appointments with this professional. Bring up the doctor for new cases and new diagnosis. And the idea that someone can see a mental health professional more frequently. So if there's an issue, they can get into this doctor. This doctor would also, or this CMHA, the mental health assistant, they'd be able to prescribe and keep people on their medication. I hear all the time about people whose prescription ran out and they didn't get it filled. They couldn't get into the doctor right away. This would help, you know, fill that gap. And if there's a crisis, if someone needs an adjustment in their medication, this person meets every week with their doctor. They can alert the doctor quickly so that the patient can be seen more quickly if they need to make adjustments or there's something more going on. So just an idea to better help, you know, Ohioans to fill this workforce shortage that we have when it comes to mental health professionals.
Is it kind of like a physician's assistant?
Kind of like a physician's assistant, the training is, except for this is laser focused on mental health issues. So it's a 4-year program, but then 2 years, 30 hours of intense clinical training focused solely on behavioral health, mental health, and substance abuse disorders.
So your bill. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the idea is to really extend the care of the physician to free him up for acute and severe cases.
Your bill passed out of a Senate committee, but there are only a few weeks left in this General Assembly. Do you see it passing now, or do you think maybe this is something that goes next year, gets folded into the budget?
Well, this is a top priority for me, so I'm gonna do what I can to get it done here, because we need help sooner rather than later. We need to get on this. So. It's really an innovative way. I've been working with NeoMed, Northeast Ohio Medical School, on this programming, and it's something that I think other states will join in, because this is a national crisis, but certainly it's going to help people here in Ohio.
Vicki, you know, at the Buckeye Ranch, you guys have gone from seeing about 4,000 children a year to over 7,000. What would you like to see in terms of additional staff and additional resources? Because, I mean, I looked at your website. You're always looking for more volunteers, more donations.
We are. That's right. You know, as everyone has said, we are in a workforce shortage. We have one mental health profession for every 340 people who need mental health care. At the Buckeye Ranch, we really are focused on providing the right treatment at the right time. And so this is a time where we need to be as effective and efficient in our service delivery as ever before, so that we can continue to serve more people. Our governor has done some amazing things in this state to fund some of this mental health work. And so that is a great thing. It has allowed providers to at least maintain some of their staffing because we haven't had a lot of funding infusion in many years in mental health. There also are lots of strategies going on to try to encourage people who are in school to be successful in completing school. You know, so I think about students who are in the business field. In the business field, they have paid co-ops or paid internships where they get to practice that skill and get paid for it. As a master's level social worker or clinician, you actually pay twice to do that same clinical practice and get experience. So there are some systemic barriers that we need to overcome in this work to encourage people to not only go into the field, but be successful at completing it. And those things are beginning to happen in Ohio. So I do see great things happening, but we just have to overall really increase the value. You know, you mentioned earlier, people are retiring, people are getting burned out post COVID. This work is not easy. Mental health crises, mental health needs when you're a parent do not happen Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. So our staff have unpredictable hours. They may have a planned day and then they need to respond to one of their clients. And so we really do need to fund this work. We need to make sure that we have lots of different access points for families. And we need to increase the value. We need to say to mental health providers, right, you have the same value as a person in the physical health side of this work. And both are equally important. And then I think when we value it and fund it, I think we'll make greater strides.
You know, what's interesting to me, what you said is you talked about completing high school. And I know there's been a lot of conversation at the legislature about like tech, career tech funding and alternatives to college and completion. And even Senator Gavron, there's a bill moving through the legislature to modernize and make the foster and adoption processes more streamlined. It's fascinating to me, Senator, how much of it touches just beyond actual mental health into all of these different pieces of legislation.
It really is intertwined. And actually, the reason I even joined the legislature was the issues I was seeing in my law practice with children and the impact on families and the court system on, you know, that mental health has on all of these different areas. And so when we can, you know, try to help get people, you know, connect people with the help they need, it's going to have a wide-reaching impact across our state.
Vicki, there is a bill moving through the legislature right now that deals with fostering and adoption, but you have a program called HAY, or Healing Alternatives for Youth. What's different there from the regular foster care system?
Sure. Again, the Buckeye Ranch recognized that there was this gap in our child welfare system. And so, you know, we have seen on the news the last couple of years that there are children who have acute needs, lots of trauma, who are in the child welfare system, and we have a placement crisis. We do not have a place for them to go. And so this really was out of a response. So we partnered with Franklin County Children's Services to say, what is it that you need? What do you see that families need to be able to say yes to care for some of these kids who are in your lobby or needing a placement? And really, you know, just like a biological family, foster families and caregivers need support. And they need support, you know, more than just 9 to 5, more than telephonic. And so our Healing Alternatives for Youth is creating a space for foster parents to say yes to these kids who have acute behavioral needs, typically teenagers who do not really want to be in any parenting home, let alone a foster home. And we bring in mental health clinicians to help them. And we also bring in behavioral specialists who are trained in trauma and who can understand that when a child is pushing back, that really is not about the foster parent. That really is about, you know, their trauma and their mental health journey. And so just wrapping supports around that family to help this placement be stable.
Final question for you, Vicki. How do we find the Buckeye Ranch? How do we donate? How do we volunteer?
Yeah, well, we would love to have you partner with the Buckeye Ranch. You can reach us at our website, www.buckeyeranch.org. We would love to have you. We are deep in the throes of our Hope for the Holiday program, where every youth that we serve gets supported by people in the community, purchasing items for their wish list. So we would love to have your listeners. And you can do that by just going to buckeyeranch.org. Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, that was Vicki Thompson-Sandy, President and CEO of the Buckeye Ranch. I also want to say thank you to Senator Teresa Gavarone. Her bill would create a new kind of medical health professional. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for listening to All Sides here on 89.7 NPR News.